during a very important week in preparation for a big-time game Saturday. The recruiting train rolls on as the Tigers get another one. Hold that Tiger. We'll get reports from LSU. We'll get reports from Auburn. Jeff Duncan will join us. We'll talk Drew Brees, Zion Williamson, and a whole lot of other things. And week 8 of the NFL, the Schwab joins us for his picks. Drew Brees or Teddy Bridgewater? We'll see. Today, Thursday, October 24th, 2019.
Swinging a chopper third base side. Tough chance coming in. Bregman bare hands the ball to throw to first. Throws it away. Here comes the second run. He'll score. Zimmerman goes to second. Nobody there. And the throw is not in time with Cabrera scoring behind Kendrick. Six runs home in the inning.
Off the screen. Out top Matisse. Dybul with a ball fake to Horford. Three in the air for the Sixers. And that's no good. Rebound. Tobias Harris. In on Brown. Fakes one way. Hemp along the baseline. Got to get out of the lane. Goes to Ben. Simmons on a drive. Going away from the basket. Puts it up and in. Ben Simmons drives it right to left. In the lane. And scores. And the Sixers 87. Boston 73.
Nuggets looking for a 6-0 run here. Millsap, stutter step and a drive on CJ. Throws it in the opposite corner. Jokic, three. Yeah! That is large! Nuggets lead it by 7, 97-90. 3:05 to go.
And welcome. The day after, the Washington Nationals put a 6 on the board in the 7th inning and 3 more in the 8th to put the Houston Astros away by the score of 12-3. The short list of those who've lost the first two World Series games at home and then won the series were the 85 Royals, the 86 Mets, and the 96 Yankees. So, Astros fans, don't give up the ship just yet. We heard some NBA clips. The biggest and the most impressive aspect of night number 2 in the NBA was Kyrie Irving putting up a 50 spot in a loss for the Brooklyn Nets. But as LSU prepares for the Auburn Tigers in a huge, huge matchup this Saturday, we heard or we saw the infamous tweet, hold that Tiger, from Ed Orgeron or whoever does his Twitter world for him. I'm sure it's not he. And this one, I mean, you think of the great left fielders that ever played the game, Babe Ruth, Ted Williams, Carl Yastrzemski, my personal favorite, Lou Brock. I mean, this came from left field. I don't think anybody saw it, but maybe our next guest, Billy Embody of Go 247 Sports. Billy, thanks for the time. A 5-star tight end commitment. Where did this come from? How are you?
I'm still reeling from this, but it came from out of nowhere is what it came from. Everyone around LSU was not expecting Art Gilbert, the 5-star tight end out of Marietta, Georgia, to commit to LSU on Wednesday night. I can tell you that, myself included, other recruiting called experts after this one were just in shock when we went ahead and put on the LSU hat. But look, he's a generational tight end prospect. He's the highest rated prospect at the tight end position ever on 24/7 Sports. He's an absolute freak athlete. He's just really, really, more so than anything, an impressive kid. I enjoyed talking to him at the opening finals, and he wanted to make his own decision, and his parents were up there with him. He had family up there, coaches, and no one knew where he was going. And he ends up going to LSU.
Well, I mean, everybody was after him. What was the difference? What why? How?
I think he had a really good relationship with John DeCoster, who's the tight ends coach over there. That relationship went back about a year and a half, and they had him on campus in the spring and had him on campus in the summer, and then got him back on campus for an official visit for the Florida game, when they really used tight end Thad Moss just like they had been selling him on. They used him in the passing game. They split him out. They showed him more film on Stephon Sullivan, who's a former wide receiver turned to tight end, and another kind of 6'6", 240, 50-pound type of athlete like Arik is. And that was kind of the difference. Joe Brady's offense and how he wants to use the tight end position going forward was a huge, huge selling point for him when it came down to it as well.
I mean, LSU's always been able to get wide receivers when they had really nothing to offer to them. But now you've got maybe four of the top eight wide receivers in the country all coming to LSU. And I saw this somewhere. You could have the number one tight end in Gilbert, the number one wide receiver in Rakeem Jarrett. You got Terrence Marshall, who was rated the number one wide receiver prospect in his class. John Emery was the number one ranked running back in his class. And Derek Stingley Jr. was the number one cornerback. That's how you get pay raises as a head football coach.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how you, again, we've seen LSU revamp their offense, and they're now a legit option to beating Alabama, and certainly they've got to take care of business against Auburn, but they have an offense that can be something that they can take into Tuscaloosa in a couple weeks and feel like they have a legit shot to beat Alabama. So I think that's one of the differences going forward. But the big difference that we've kind of seen is that they've started to build up the athletes and the top-end talent that they actually have on this roster, and that is what ultimately wins ball games. It really does. You can have great scheme, but you got to keep getting great players, and they're getting guys that are true difference makers, at least in terms of the eyes of a recruiting analyst. And that is something that, while they've done very well at wide receiver and corner and other positions at times, you know, running back, they have not landed somebody that comes in as it's historic. He's a historic recruit that's going to be coming to Baton Rouge in spring. He's an early enrollee as well.
That's awesome. Arik Gilbert is the 165, 253 out of Marietta, Georgia. We're talking with Billy Embody, a recruiting analyst for Go247 Sports. That puts LSU at 22 commitments. So I'm thinking, okay, well, we got to get this defensive lineman, this offensive lineman. I mean, you got some running backs out there. You got some, quote, athlete, close quote, talent out there. I mean, Coach O's got some decisions to make.
Yeah, they do. And we'll see kind of how the numbers work out. As many schools will tell you, they just, quote-unquote, the numbers always work out. So it'll be interesting to see kind of where they go from here. They need a running back, and they'll have the number one running back in the country, Zach Evans, on campus this weekend for his official visit. They want an offensive tackle. They want a safety. They've got some other needs that they certainly want to address, outside linebacker and a pass rusher. So you'll see some shifting here over the next couple months for sure. This class, we'll see some guys not end up signing with it, and others that you know, maybe some more surprises on the way.
Some more surprises on the way. There's a defensive lineman in the state of Louisiana, though. I mean, they've got a spot reserved for him, right? No matter what.
Yes, sir. Jacoby and Guillory, and I feel really, really good about where LSU stands with him. He's been to, I think, just about every home game. I think he missed Florida game or maybe it was the one of the home games. He missed it for like a test or some sort of maybe homecoming. But anyway, he's been to every home game that he's been able to. He hasn't visited anywhere else. So big positive for LSU there with the big nose tackle out of Alexandria.
You know all these names. I got to be honest with this. That's the first time I heard of this tight end, Gilbert, was when he announced he is signing with LSU. Is there another name that nobody's talking about that we should keep our eye on?
Oh, man. I think his teammate, B.J. Ojulari, is to Tennessee. That would be one. I mean, people are talking about him for sure, but it would be, you know, a flip scenario and all of those things. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, we're bound to see some other big names pop up on campus over the next couple months, for sure.
How much stock do you give to the number one ranked running back that's coming in town this weekend? I mean, LSU's got some running backs already. What kind of odds do you give, and how high on the list is he from a priority standpoint?
Yeah, he's a huge priority, has been for about 3 or 4 years now for this staff. And I like where LSU stands. I think he's one that's going to march to the beat of his own drum. We'll see when he makes a decision, but LSU's in a great spot to get him, that's for sure.
Okay, so needless to say, any comparisons with this guy? I mean, this tight end that they signed, I mean, does he remind you of anybody? He's like you said, it's uncharted territory.
I think O.J. Howard is the natural comparison for him, and not to compare him to an Alabama player, but he really is kind of that big physical, you know, specimen at tight end that can change a game. And so that's just the natural comparison for him.
All right. There it is. Hold that tiger. That's a big one. Billy, I know you're busy. I greatly appreciate your time, man. Thanks for the update. What a night. Some outstanding news on the recruiting trail. We appreciate it, buddy. Keep up the great work.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, Jordy.
All right, Billy Embody, go to 47 Sports. We finally got somebody that Alabama wanted him, Georgia wanted him, Clemson wanted him. I mean, LSU got him. And he didn't tell LSU. They didn't know until he put the hat on his head. He wanted to surprise everybody, and he didn't. He talked about one team, one heartbeat, the family there. And make no mistake about it, this new offense is opening things up. Players are getting better. They're developing high-quality talent from the high school level and improving them on the collegiate level and getting them to the NFL. And that's what it's all about. And that's how LSU is going to stay a powerhouse. And that's how Ed Orgeron is going to go from $4 million a year to more. And Joe Brady's going to get more. And Steve Ensminger is going to get more. And LSU's going to get this $1.3 million field improvement passed by the Board of Supervisors tomorrow, where they're going to put another turf field out there and improve the conditions of their practice facility. That's what it's all about. The beat goes on. So the number one rated tight end in the country, the highest rated prospect in LSU's class of 22 commitments, it moves LSU up per Rivals to the number three ranked recruiting class in America. And the beat goes on. But Saturday is a huge game. We're going to hear from behind enemy lines. Brandon Marcello will join us next to talk about the Auburn Tigers here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Well, it wouldn't be a complete Auburn week if we didn't bring our next guest in. He's always available for us when we ask him, and he does a tremendous job for Auburn 24/7 Sports, and that is our good friend Brandon Marcello. So, Brandon, first of all, always great to talk to you, man. How have you been up there in the lovely village on the plains?
Doing well. We were going through a drought there for a while. We finally got some rain last week, though. But doing well.
Good. How's my boy Gus Malzahn doing? Is he doing well?
Yeah, his seat is not hot right now, and so he's doing okay. this final 30 days, 30 plus days of the season are going to be a roller coaster.
All right, so you followed Auburn for a long, long time. Just how good is this Auburn defense this year?
It's one of the better ones they've had in probably school history. Definitely one of the best ones they've had since the mid-2000s. It's just a matter of, for them, they've allowed a lot of passing yards, but they've also faced a lot of teams that love to throw the ball. I mean, heading into last week, they had faced three of the top four passing offenses as far as pass attempts in the SEC. Plus, they had faced Oregon And now they're about to face LSU. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how they do against LSU in that pass offense. But their run defense has been incredible. Their defensive line is by far the strongest they've had in years, maybe since the late 80s, from talking to some folks that have been around Auburn longer than me. And that's where it all starts for them, stopping the run and making teams one-dimensional. And it's going to be huge key for them, obviously, Saturday at LSU.
Brandon Marcello, Auburn 24-7. Back when you had Cam Newton, you also had a pretty good defensive lineman who was very disruptive. How good is Derrick Brown compared to him?
You know, Gus Malzahn believes that he's just as good as Derrick Brown is just as good as Nick Fairley. The difference, though, with this line compared to 2010 is they've got two really good elite defensive linemen. That's Marlon Davidson at defensive end, who's won the SEC's Defensive Lineman of the Week three times this season. Derrick Brown's won it two times this season. So in five of Auburn's seven games this year, those two have won Defensive Lineman of the Week, one of those two. It's pretty incredible. And they've been getting to the quarterback. Derrick Brown at tackle has been phenomenal, and this defensive line does a great job of forcing fumbles as well. That's been their primary way of causing turnovers. Their defense has only forced two interceptions all season. So this is a situation where they've got to find a way, obviously on Saturday, to get to Joe Burrow and then also force some turnovers, whether it's stripping the ball out of running back's hands or even out of the quarterback's hands, which they've done several times this season. They're very, very impressive on that defensive front.
Brandon Marcello, Auburn 24-7. I got to ask your opinion because I never thought I'd see a day like this with an LSU offense as explosive as this. From your perspective on the outside looking down here, what do you say about this thing?
How did this happen so quickly? It's incredible. It's insane watching LSU this year. You know, as one Auburn player put it, it's like he goes, I don't even bother wasting my time watching the LSU-Auburn game last year to watch the quarterback. He says, because that's not the same quarterback out there. This is not the same offense. It is night and day. You can't learn anything from watching film last season. It's incredible. You know, it's everything that I'm sure LSU fans have been wanting for the past 10 years with an offense, because they've had so many great receivers. I mean, just tremendous receivers, and now it's finally you're seeing what could be possible. And I mean, goodness gracious, averaging 50 points a game, what is this, 10 straight games they scored 35 points or more? I mean, they're unstoppable. I don't know if Auburn can stop them or even slow them down, but you know, Joe Burrow's a front runner in the Heisman race, in my opinion, and I know a lot of people are saying that this week, but what he's doing is just absolutely insane.
Brandon, let's talk about his counterpart. Take me from Bo Nix game one Oregon to Bo Nix now. How has his progression grown?
Yeah, you know, he's more comfortable running RPOs, which is something that they ran, obviously, all throughout the season, but not as much. They've been running it a little bit more here the last couple of weeks. Secondly, he's more accurate on the deep ball than he was earlier in the season. He had really struggled throwing the deep ball. And in Gus Malzahn's offense, they're just a run play action team. They run it, and then they go deep. They run it, and they try to go deep. And Nix was just misfiring left and right earlier this season. He's gotten better, but it started popping up again when they went on the road to Florida, which was a concern because it's like, well, you got to go to LSU here in a few weeks, and are you going to be able to fix that? Well, they go to Arkansas, which was more or less a spring game, even with the crowd there. It was just so sparse. And he was on target once again.
Yeah.
Can he do it at LSU? If he does that, it'll be another step forward. But his progression has mostly been, one, I think he's had a handle on this offense since he's been here because he ran the same offense at his high school. They actually just took Gus Malzahn's playbook pretty much and adapted it. So he's okay with it. It's just he's got to be more accurate, and he's got to calm down in these pressure situations on the road.
Brandon Marcello, Auburn 24-7. So, to me personally, I think LSU has to help Auburn out here. Turn the ball over, fumble the football, do some things like that. I'm in agreement with you. If LSU doesn't do that, I don't know if Auburn Auburn can't outscore LSU in a game like this, can they?
No, it can't be a shootout. Auburn's got to keep this game in the upper 20s or lower 30s. If it's 35 points or more, Auburn's not winning this game. There's just no way. I don't see it happening. Auburn's way too inconsistent offensively, even against bad defenses at times. They scored 51 at Arkansas, okay? Well, that's good and great. But they had like 14 yards in the second quarter. And that's been an issue for them all season. Once they get off script, usually in the second quarter, they have really struggled. Their worst quarter by far this season is in the second quarter. They've been held under 60 yards, I think, like four times in the second quarter. Meanwhile, I did some research on this. LSU's best quarter offensively is the second quarter. So if Auburn has another lull in the second quarter when they get off script, and then LSU comes out firing and scores what they usually average, about 15 to 16 points in the second quarter, and Auburn can't get anything going, that might be enough for LSU to pull away and just cruise the rest of the way. So Auburn has got to figure out a way to get over these lulls. And I think the way they do that is they've got to get better coaching from Gus Malzahn. He has got to adjust after defenses adjust to his script.
All right, we'll see if there's a nickname for this game. There's more nicknames in this series than any other series I can think of on earth. It should be a fun one. It'll be a packed house. Safe travels down the highway, and enjoy your stay in Baton Rouge. Any prediction for me as we close up?
Yeah, I don't have a score prediction yet, but LSU, I think, is going to win by 7 to 10, somewhere in that range. I think it'll be entertaining for a bit, but like I said, if Auburn has a lull, it could be a blowout.
We'll talk to you during hoop season, my friend. Always a pleasure, man. Thanks so much for being with us.
Great catching up. Thanks.
Brandon Marcella does a tremendous job for Auburn 24-7. 7-10. Going against Vegas. We'll get the LSU side of things. Brody Miller of The Athletic as we continue rolling. Game is so big, we got to talk about it from both sides of the fence. We'll get Brody's prediction as well when we continue here on the Jordy Helfrich Show, brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, you can't shop right at all. We'll be right back.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Huntberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, well, we got the Auburn perspective of things. Let's get the LSU side of the fence from our good friend that covers LSU for The Athletic, Mr. Brody Miller. Brody, how are you, my friend? How's life?
I'm doing well, man. Just leaving the coffee shop, having a good day. How are you doing?
Oh, it's a tough life. Coffee in the afternoon. Good for you, man.
Hey,
good
I'm working. All right, I mean,
so
I'm at a coffee shop.
We just
working.
Talked to. Oh, yeah, whatever. Okay, good. I know your bosses are listening. They all listen to this show, so that's good. We'll wink, blink, and nod with you. That's good. Okay. We just got the word from Auburn. Run it, take a deep shot down the field. So if you're going to run it, and LSU stops the run, that means that Auburn's going to test, who do they test, Christian Fulton or Derek Stingley Jr.? Kind of pick your poison, right?
That is the question, yeah. I mean, it's something that I think every opponent LSU's faced has been trying to figure out this year because, you know, it is kind of interesting how, you know, in 2017, no one wanted to throw at Dante Jackson, so they threw at Greedy Williams. He had six interceptions. Last year, no one wanted to throw at Greedy Williams, so Christian Fulton got the targets. He became the breakout star. And then the first five games of this year, no one wanted to throw at Fulton, so Derek Stingley became the breakout star. And now you're at a spot where who do you throw at? And last week, Mississippi State tried throwing at Christian Fulton to try to mix it up and didn't throw at Stingley at all. Christian Fulton forced them 1 of 5 when they were throwing at him with an interception. All of a sudden, you just think, I mean, who do you go at? And it is worth noting, Florida went at Stingley pretty hard, and Van Jefferson actually did have some success on Stingley, so he's not invincible. Mm-hmm. But overall, I mean, Stingley's been arguably the best corner in the SEC right now. So I don't know what you do, but if I'm a college coach, and I'm not for a good reason, but I think the one place you can have success attacking LSU is the middle of the field. It's teams are completing, 68% of passes there, and you know, for I think 7 or 8 yards per attempt. That's a problem, and a lot of it is I had a really good talk with Jacoby Stevens about it, and he's one of the smartest players on the team, and he was saying the really smart coaches, and Dan Mullins was one of the best at this, is really good at messing with, LSU's defense, making them rotate around, and then force manufacturing one-on-ones with the Kerry Vincents of the world, the Jacoby Stevens of the world, and they've been winning those battles. But it's interesting because Auburn doesn't really attack the middle of the field at all. So the question is, do they start doing that? I don't know.
At all.
Yeah, I think,
we'll
I think the stat
Brody
is
Miller,
off top of my
the
head.
Athletic. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think the stat off
go
top
ahead,
of my head is Auburn takes 129 of its 147 pass attempts have been outside the hashes.
Wow. Okay. They better look at some film of this team. But, they threw it over the middle, and Jacoby Stevens made a great athletic play. Has Dave Aranda figured it out now? Is all the experimentation over? Because it looks like the old Grant Delpit has reemerged.
So I'm really curious to see, and I don't think we'll have a real answer on that till Alabama, because you're right. Grant Delpit's been much back in the box more, playing in the front seven a bit, more of an outside linebacker spot, and he's looked great. But it's worth noting the last two teams LSU has played have been Florida with Kyle Trask and Mississippi State with Garrett Schrader. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, Trask ended up playing well, but both of those games are games where LSU, going into the game plan, was not worried about the opposing quarterback going deep on him. So I wonder if, they felt more free to play a little more cover zero, get guys down the box because you're not scared of that. So is this a result of purely a game planning thing, or was this, like you said, maybe them realizing they want Grant Delpit there more? I'm really interested to see what they do going forward because I could see it going either way.
Oh, I tell you what a surprise last night in the commitment from the tight end, Arik Gilbert. I mean, that caught everybody off kilter. Everybody thought it was going to be Alabama or Georgia. I mean, LSU coaches didn't even think he was coming. But what does that say about the way LSU's going about things and the significance of a Joe Brady now, where, my goodness gracious, you come to LSU, you're going to get the football, they're going to develop you, you're going to get to the next level, the NFL career's waiting for you.
Yeah, and by the way, you'll enjoy this, just to show how much of a surprise this announcement was. I didn't even tune into the announcement because I was told he was going to Alabama. So I was cooking dinner and using my broiler when the announcement happens. I jump on my computer to go figure out what the heck just happened, and I start a very small fire in my kitchen because I left my broiler on my food. So not a great moment. But that just shows how much of a surprise this was. But that also shows I'm a 25-year-old who's learning to cook. But anyway, yeah, I really think it does say a great deal. I mean, if you watch his post-announcement interview, the first person he named was Joe Brady. That says a lot. I mean, this guy for 24/7 Sports is the highest rated tight end prospect in 24/7 Sports history. I mean, this is somebody that LSU just flat out wouldn't get historically. And I just think it's so crazy when you look at there are eight receivers or tight ends, depending on what they're listed as, ranked in the top 50 in the 2020 class right now on 24/7. LSU has commitments from four of them, three receivers, and now Arik Gilbert at tight end.
Wow.
That is just bizarre, and that obviously so much of that is.
Yeah.
And Ogeron deserves credit for just how good of a recruiter he is in general, but you're not getting Arik Gilbert without this offense doing what it's doing.
You're right. Brody Miller, well said, from The Athletic. This is a better defense than LSU's facing than Florida was. Everybody says it. Everybody agrees to that. What is LSU doing? What do you think the mindset of Coach Craig in this offensive line against such a formidable front four who seems to be all healthy, whereas Florida had a good front four, but they lost two of their guys. They weren't 100%. It's a different beast come Saturday.
Yeah, I always go back to this, and this is more of just a theory, and I could be completely wrong here, and I think I've said it on your show before, but I'm always interested by, you look at the games where LSU's offensive line struggles most. It's the games where teams are doing these funky stunts. It's Texas. It's even Northwestern State last year. It's games where they're doing all these kind of tackles X's and creative delayed things, and they're really messing with the offensive line from a communication point of view. and that's when they usually get success pass rushing. Auburn is very base. They are just, we have the four best defensive linemen, and we're going to beat you straight up, which is really funny looking back on last year when LSU had maybe the worst offensive line in the SEC, and Auburn was probably their best offensive line performance. And I think that's really interesting because it didn't make any sense at the time, but Auburn plays really straightforward. Kevin Steele is going to just beat you in base. And I'm not speculating that LSU is going to win this battle. Auburn obviously has the advantage there, but I just think that is kind of worth noting that I wonder if there's something to that idea that LSU's offensive line, if they're not going to be confused, they can hold their own. And at the end of the day, I mean, Auburn's defense is top to bottom great. I'm not arguing that. LSU's is a better statistical run defense, but Auburn's might be the real best run defense in the SEC right now. And, you know, it's a pretty good secondary. Right. But Joe Burrow is so good under pressure. I mean, the craziest stat I think I've seen in college football right now is that Joe Burrow, per Sports Info Solutions, he leads the country on target percentage when he's in, like when he's unpressured, 92%. And then he also leads the country right when under pressure at 82%. That is jarring. That is some crazy level stats right there. So, I mean, if Auburn wants to send pressure, they'd love that because that's going to open things up. And Joe Burrow is pretty great at picking apart a defense when you send extra bodies at him. I don't know if there's an obvious way to beat this LSU defense, but I think if Auburn can take away the run completely, free up some other guys and get a four-man rush, then it's definitely possible.
Thus, the addition of Terrace Marshall just makes it even more difficult, doesn't it?
Definitely. Yeah, that's a good point because, you know, there's a lot of reasons why Terrace Marshall's important, and I won't deny any of them. He's a star. But it's almost like the most specific thing that's going to be helpful about that isn't Marshall himself. It's that, like you said, it's the idea that that's, you know, it's so hard to cover three superstar receivers. So all of a sudden, okay, maybe, you know, last week, for example, you started seeing Mississippi State get an extra safety to help out with Jamar Chase, and that really took Chase out of the game a little bit. You can't do that against if you have all three of these guys healthy, because if you commit an extra safety to one guy, then Jefferson and Marshall is going to have a field day or vice versa. So having that third extra guy really just frees everything up. So, yeah, like you said, if Auburn does get a pass rush, Burrow's going to have somebody open.
And don't think that Eric Gilbert, the tight end commitment, didn't see how improved Mr. Moss is and how they've utilized him at times in the passing game. He's become very reliable, very dependable.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm a big believer in, you know, admitting when we're all kind of in the media a little, not everybody, but me at least, a little bit wrong about somebody. I mean, my perception on Thaddeus Moss for the past year and a half since he got here was he was a receiver, right? He was just a finesse kind of go out, you know, spread him out kind of tight end who technically played, you know, in the line. But he has been a really reliable blocker. I mean, that Florida game, some of those blocks he had in one-on-one situations were pretty impressive. He's been really good at receiver. At one point, they hit him with the same exact play twice in a row for 24 yards and 22 yards, which also shows how vanilla I think LSU was going last week. They literally ran the same play twice in a row.
Yeah,
Thaddeus Moss has been really impressive, and I think that's a really good point that, you know, past years, if you're a tight end recruit looking at LSU, I mean, you're being like, I don't really know if there's a chance for me to do much there in a passing game. You see the way Thaddeus Moss is being used, and sometimes Stephon Sullivan, even though he's moved back to receiver, you know, you're seeing the possibilities there. And if you put somebody like Eric Gilbert, who's probably even he's more physically gifted even than anybody on LSU's roster at tight end, he could all of a sudden that's one more toy for Joe Brady to play with if he's still around.
If if he is still around. While things are going good, you got to ask for the moon, and LSU's asking for more help. They're asking for the Board of Supervisors tomorrow to approve a $1.3 million improvement to their practice fields, right?
Yeah, I don't know too much about that. I mean, it's all funded by TAF, so I'm sure it's relatively routine. I don't know too much about that situation, but
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Before the Florida game, Ed Orgeron said the key to the game is we got to stop the run, and we got to protect our quarterback. The keys to the game, and we made Trask look like he was a Hall of Fame quarterback in the first half. My goodness gracious. Maybe the game of his life, game of his career in that one. Playing Auburn, it's the same keys. Protect the quarterback, stop the run. Is Nix capable of hurting this LSU defense with the pass?
It is really funny because I don't think anyone knows, because some games he's looked like a potential superstar, and in other games he looks like a true freshman, which I think he's going to be a great player down the road. But, he has freshman moments. So I don't know.
I agree.
You look back at the Knicks game, or the Kyle Trask game, what happened there, which is really interesting, was LSU didn't think highly of him. They played a lot of zone and thought that he would make a ton of errors in zone, and he didn't. He tore him up. I wonder if this time, and then the second LSU switched back to man and started blitzing more, they shut out Florida down and won the game. I wonder if this time, especially against a team that you know is going to run the ball, I think they stick with man the whole time, and LSU, when playing man, is going to have an advantage against most teams. So I think if they do that, they have a pretty good chance of taking care of the business here. But, hey, this is the best. It's worth noting, by the way, LSU is an incredible run defense statistically, but they haven't faced a single true running football team. Florida, Texas, Utah State, none of those teams are real running football teams.
Right.
So I'm interested to see.
I can't even tell you who the Auburn running back is this year. You know what I mean? They don't have that bell cow superstar runner like they have year after year, or do they?
They definitely don't. I mean, they don't have anybody that's Booby Whitlow, but I don't know. I mean, sometimes I'm a little old-fashioned in that. Especially with a running game that is Auburn's style of running, I just put so much more emphasis on the offensive line than I do the running back himself. I mean, obviously, a great running back can make a run better, but I'm kind of old-fashioned where I'm going to give the credit there to the offensive line. But, no, it's a good point.
No, that's very, very true. I just like LSU when they're pressured on defense. I didn't like that aspect about the Florida game. I think Aranda was trying to figure out how to play people that play similarly in similar positions, but they're the best athletes. How do you get them on the field and put them in the best position to do what they do best? I think the experimentation is over, and I anticipate this LSU defense, along with getting healthier, I'm anticipating them to kind of, as Emeril Lagasse would say, kick it up a notch.
I like that. No, I agree. And Grant Delpit had that great comment after the game Saturday in Starkville, where he said, when Coach Aranda gets aggressive, when he gets creative, that's where the genius comes out. And he said, he's like, he's still got a lot left he hasn't shown you guys. So I think that is it's worth keeping an eye on. I mean, the only thing I'd say about the experimentation, and this is another just pure Brody theory I could be wrong about, but I wonder how much of them playing zone is they know that, listen, as good as LSU is in man, and it's good in man, it's hard to do that against Alabama with those receivers and that passing game with Tua. I mean, you can play man against a lot of other quarterbacks, but you need to be able to play zone against that Alabama passing game. So I really wonder if so much of this season has been he's trying to get this team better at zone because it hasn't been great and they need to be able to do it. But at the same time, maybe you're right. Maybe it's to kind of give up's not the right word, but just say, listen, we got to beat Auburn right now, and we can beat Auburn with man. I think you're right, and I do think you'll see them get pretty aggressive with Bo Nix.
I kind of like the Brodyism. I think that has some definite merit. I hope nobody else but the fans might be looking ahead. I hope nobody's looking past Auburn. There's too many wild games with too many crazy finishes for anybody to overlook this team. So with that being said, how does this game unfold in the eyes and the mind of Brody Miller?
That's not a very good eyes and mind, but I think Auburn will be the first team you see actually kind of have an impact on LSU's offense. I'm not saying they'll dominate, but I think it's a good matchup because, one, they can just kind of slow it down a little bit. You can trust that defensive line. But here's the other factor that comes into play when you're stopping a defense. Auburn can also control the clock because they can run the ball so well, right? That's the big thing, is that if you can slow them down on defense a little and control the clock. I'm not saying Auburn wins, but I think this will be one of the lower scoring ones. I'll go LSU 31, Auburn 21.
31-21. I'll keep coming up with the Brodyisms because I like those. But do me a favor. Stay out of the kitchen, okay?
Well, no, I think I need to get better at it. That's why I need to keep working.
Well, go do it outside. Bring the grill
That's
outside.
That's good advice. No more fires.
Brody, thanks, man. You're doing a terrific job. I mean, I think this marriage between you and The Athletic has been perfect. Good for you. Keep up the great work. It's always fun reading your in-depth articles, and we greatly appreciate you sharing some time with us, man. Take care.
Oh, I always have a blast on this show. Take care, Jordy.
All right, there you go. Brody Miller of The Athletic. He picks the Tigers by 10. Brandon Marcello picks the Tigers by of LSU by 7 to 10. Of course, we will give our predictions on Friday because it wouldn't be a football Friday without that. All right. You know, 103.7 The Game is constantly thinking about you. We always want you to benefit. So we've got the Mr. Lester's $150 gift certificate giveaway for you to participate in. All you have to do to enter to win a $150 gift certificate to Mr. Lester's Steakhouse, which just happens to be located inside Cypress Bayou Casino, enter to win in the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse. Just go to 103.7thegame.com. It's simple. It's easy. You got a $150 certificate to gain and absolutely nothing to lose. That's why we keep doing it. We are the station that keeps on giving. And we'll give you the closeout to hour number one next.
You're listening to the Jordy Holtberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Ardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
I think it's a pretty cool idea what LSU's done. Guest captains for this Saturday's game, five of them, they all had memorable moments in victories over Auburn. They'll be the guest captains. How about Tommy Hodson and Eddie Fuller, the pitch and catch combination in what is forever known as the earthquake game? LSU come from behind, wins it 7-6. How about back in 1995, we bring back Troy Twilley. Twilley and the Tigers helped bring back the magic under first-year head coach Jared Hinard. The Tigers knocked off number 5 Auburn 12-6 in Tiger Stadium. That's when LSU wore the white jerseys at home for the first time since the early 1980s. And Twilley, get this, talk about 6 degrees of separation. Twilley intercepted a Patrick Nix pass in the end zone as time expired to preserve the Tiger victory. Yes, Patrick Nix, the father of the current Auburn quarterback, Bo Nix. And then Demetrius Byrd will come back. And we'll never forget in 2007 that 22-yard touchdown pass, Matt Flynn on a string to Demetrius Byrd as time was ticking away, caught it with just 1 second remaining. LSU wins it 30-24 in Tiger Stadium. LSU could have kicked a 39-yard field goal, but Les Miles kept waiting. They kept the clock running and running, and we're all going crazy. Snap the ball, and LSU took a shot, and they were successful. And Byrd then gave the can't-see-me gesture where he takes the hand and goes over the face mask up and down, you can't see me, to the LSU student section after coming up with the catch. Wow. And then the last one is Cole Tracy. Last year, Jordan-Hare Stadium, LSU rallied from a 21-13 deficit midway through the fourth quarter behind Joe Burrow. A good defensive effort. Burrow hit Derek Dillon from 71 yards out to pull the Tigers within 2 at 21-19 with 8:18 to play. Tigers get the ball back. They march down the field. Cole Tracy drills a 42-yard field goal as the clock expired. LSU wins it 22-21. Cole Tracy will be back, and hopefully he'll touch toes or touch his foot to the foot of Cade York to give him some of that good gree-gree. And Cade York could get back on track like he was earlier in the season. So a pretty good deal for LSU, bringing back 5 guest captains who all had memorable moments against Auburn. We covered the college scene in hour number one, NFL pro scene hour number two. Jeff Duncan will join us, as will the Schwab, as he makes his week 9 picks in the NFL. It's all coming your way right here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. You've dialed us up, and we're appreciative. This is the Jordy Holtberg Show.
from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Holtberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Holtberg.
Hour number two of two, and away we go. It's Thursday, the 24th day of October. We've got football games that have been moved to tonight. Check 1037thegame.com for all the listings. Bad weather's coming Friday. Can we get it out of the way by Saturday? Meanwhile, Alvin Kamara was at practice for the Saints today. No brace or sleeve on his knee. Drew Brees wore a helmet and threw. No Jared Cook, no Traquan Smith, no Patrick Robinson, no JT Gray. How much they participated, we don't know as of yet. But when the practice report comes out, we'll figure that all out. Jeff Duncan, we'll talk Saints. We'll talk Pelicans with Jeff. Frank Schwab will join us from Shutdown Corner and Yahoo Sports for the picks of Week 8 of the NFL, which includes the Saints versus the Arizona Cardinals. And the big question mark, is Drew Brees going to play or not? Time will tell. We've got NFL football tonight, Washington at Minnesota. It's the Kirk Cousins revenge game. And if you're an NBA fan, what a double dip. The Greek Freak, Giannis Antetokounmpo, going up against James Harden and Russell Westbrook, Milwaukee versus Houston, followed by the Clippers versus Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors. What great matchups early on in the NBA. But as we do each and every day, we start off hour number two with our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, do your thing, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
CD, I can tell you're not in a very good mood. How concerned are you after the 12-3 beatdown that the Washington Nationals put on Justin Verlander and company to take a commanding 2-0 lead as the series shifts to Friday in Washington? You okay, big guy? You all right?
I'm all right, Jordy. I'm all right because of the fact I've seen series change on a drop of a hat. You're down 2-0, headed to D.C.
Okay.
I think that the Astros can get it done. They can bounce back from this. There's a reason why you play a 7-game series. This ain't like the Super Bowl. This is a best of 7 series. I mean, a few years ago we saw the 3-1
right.
lead get
That's
blown,
right.
so it wouldn't be the first time.
I'm with you. I just you gave up 14 hits. Look, Washington had those two big innings. It was 2-2 through six, and then they put a 6-spot on the seventh, a 3-spot in the eighth, and that was all she wrote. But it was good to see. I mean, Bregman had a blast in the first inning. That was,
yep.
I mean, that was no doubter about that one. But again, they just can't back it up and left a lot of runners stranded on base.
Just could not kind of get out of their own way a little bit, especially late in that ball game. It was almost like Bad News Bears-esque what we saw in those the final third of the ball game. Not exactly what you wanted to see, but I think they can wind up bouncing back. Game three, obviously, going to be huge because if you lose that one, then yeah, it's all but over. The Nationals can pop a little bit of the bubbly.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Friday night will be huge. For the Astros. So, Greinke, no pressure, big guy. Just get us through 7 innings and we'll see what happens.
And if he wins, hopefully we get more than like 4 or 5 words out of him. Because, man, the guy is very much a minimalist when it comes to him press conferences.
Hey, it don't matter. Just if he gets the win, he doesn't even have to say a word. Just get a win. I want to see this thing stretched out. I want to see it come back to Minute Maid Park. So, goodness gracious. Got to win the next 3 for that.
Exactly. You need to win the next 3 ball games if you want to wind up seeing yourself in position to be World Series champs for the second time in 3 years. But, man, it's just wild to think about the fact that now we're talking about the Nationals potentially knocking on the door of their first ever World Series title. Meanwhile, the Seattle Mariners have never even been there. That is amazing, Jordy.
Let me ask you this. Everybody is always critical of Clayton Kershaw. Oh, he's a great regular season pitcher, but in the playoffs, he sucks. Justin Verlander in the World Series is like 0-6. Does he deserve some criticism?
I think he would deserve a little bit of criticism. 0-6, and he's in the World Series, right?
Yes, yes.
He has just not looked great.
I mean, he got him to the World Series, but yep. on the biggest stage, he's not. He doesn't get it done.
He does not get it done, but, man, you got to give credit where credit is due, Jordy. He is now the postseason strikeout king, 202 strikeouts, passing John Smoltz as the K-King in the postseason. But I have to agree with you. I think there's some criticism.
Isn't it funny that you look at that from the center field camera and you see Verlander on the mound and who's sitting behind the plate watching, staring at him, but the strikeout king of strikeout kings, Nolan Ryan?
Yeah. He's loving every second of that, Jordy. You know he's just enjoying the fact he's able to see, not just, like we talk about all the time, we see Nolan Ryan, he's out there watching Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander, undoubtedly two of the top pitchers of this current era of baseball, and they are just absolutely crushing it. We saw Gerrit Cole obviously look a little bit more human, but Nolan Ryan's just out there enjoying life, watching these guys crush it.
Yeah, no question. Look, Strasburg got the better of Verlander. They both went six innings. They both gave up seven hits, but Strasburg only gave up two earned runs. Verlander gave up four. So advantage, Scherzer and Strasburg got the better of Cole and Verlander, and not many people, I think, would have taken that bet early on.
I'd have to agree with you, Jordy. And flipping on over, sticking with the MLB for a moment, but the big news, Philly is going to be hiring ex-Yankees manager Joe Girardi. Definitely seems like maybe they're trying to get things going after year one of the Bryce Harper experiment not necessarily working, which makes you wonder, what are the Nationals better sans Bryce Harper now?
Oh, wow. I don't know. that's a hard call. He's a great player. They struck lightning in a bottle. Nobody's been hotter than they have been since the All-Star break. So that's too hard to say. He's a great player. I think they would welcome him back if given the opportunity. But it is what it is. He left. He thought he'd have a better deal in Philly. And we'll see how it plays out in the years to come.
Flipping on over, Jordy, to the NFL. I know you'll probably wind up talking with a guy, Frank Schwab, about this, but might as well get your thoughts on it right here, right now. And that's about Tom Brady, the rumor and innuendo, possibly leaving the Patriots after the season. And, of course, this could be, him retiring, walking off in the sunset. But it just seems ridiculous. That's even a report of Tom Brady leaving the team.
That's a reporter saying, look, let's just read in the tea leaves. It's all speculation. He put up his house for sale, right? His trainer, TB12, has put up his house for sale. His contract's coming to an end after this season. So everybody's thinking, well, maybe the Patriots go through this thing. They've got a great defense. Maybe they go through this season. They win another Super Bowl, and maybe Brady marches off into the sunset. I can't, for the life of me, see Tom Brady playing for anyone else but the New England Patriots. I just can't. So if that does happen, that would be even more shocking than Buster Douglas knocking out Mike Tyson across the pond way back when. I can't see that.
I can't see it either, Jordy. It feels like he is going to be a Patriot. And I think if he does leave the team, it'll be more so him hanging it up and walking off into the sunset. I mean, you got six rings, you got a potential for another one before the season's all said and done. You got to think he's probably like, hey, I'm about to be done, guys.
Unless he just wants to prove to Bill Belichick, I'm going to another team, I'm going to win the Super Bowl. I did it because of me. We didn't do it because of you. I don't know Tom Brady from a hole in the wall. I don't know what his attitude is, his persona. I don't know anything about that. I just can't picture him leaving and playing for another team. I think he retires as a Patriot. But a lot will be determined on, how do they finish out this year? You went out, you go out with a Super Bowl title. That would be seven. Maybe Giselle is saying enough is enough. We got more money than we need to than we can spend. Spend some time with the kids. Give it up. And then, you know, if he wants to go in the broadcasting booth, he can do that. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. Pure speculation.
Pure speculation. But, man, it's getting ridiculous how much rumor and innuendo has been going around the world of sports, especially with that one. I was like, what is going on and why are we talking about Tom Brady leaving the Patriots whenever it just feels like that is not going to happen, at least in the terminology they're saying it?
All he has to do is say, I'm not retiring. I'm going to close out my career when I want to with the New England Patriots. But he hasn't said that. So maybe he likes having some of this attention filtered upon him. Again, I don't know his character traits. I don't know anything about him. All he has to do to end the speculation, if he wants to, dude, I'm not going anywhere else. I'm not retiring. I said I wanted to play till I'm 45. I'm playing till I'm 45. But he hadn't said that. So that's why it's like a, bless those people out in California when they had those wildfires. They just spread and spread and spread until it finally goes away. It'll go away. But until then, we just got to talk about something. And everybody's talking about that. So we'll see. All right, there's your Hot Topics. Thank you, CD. Brought to you by Cajun Chef Hot Sauce. It's the best hot sauce in the world. If you're coming to the LSU game, you're going to high school football games, bring a bottle with you because everything tastes – we love to eat, but we love to eat great food. And Cajun Chef Hot Sauce makes good food, great food. So bring it with you and enjoy every bit of it. Cajun Chef Hot Sauce. We've been together as partners for a while, a long time, and they are great, great people. The Beard family right there in St. Martinville. Jeff Duncan, Saints and Zion, everything in Nollins next.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
All right, we welcome you back. Peterbilt of Louisiana, best trucks in the business in New Orleans, Baton Rouge, Lake Charles, and in Lafayette. Every truck driver wants a Peterbilt because it's the best. And we are joined by the best from The Athletic, our good friend Jeff Duncan. Jeff, it's been a while, man. I appreciate the time. But look, Tulane and the Raging Cajuns up in Lafayette are pretty darn good football teams. LSU's a great football team, and it looks like the Saints are a great football team. What a great time, huh? I mean, it's if you're a football fan, this is the place to be.
Yeah, Jordy, it's a pretty remarkable season so far. I don't think we've ever had quite a successful football season top to bottom, all over the south of Louisiana. And the Saints and LSU look as good as anybody. I think they're both bona fide championship contenders, and it's really going to make this November-December run really interesting.
Yeah. So I'm going to put the Sean Payton visor on you. And Drew Brees comes up to you and says, Coach, I'm good to go. What do you do?
Oh, I play him as long as my medical team says it's okay. And from everything I've heard, he's good to mm-hmm. go. I mean, they're going to rely on Drew's information and how he feels, how he performs. They're going to watch him, obviously. You know Drew Brees is going to want to play. That's the way he's wired. He's a competitor. He lost his job in San Diego to an injury. He wants to be out there. This is his team, and he's been through a lot, ups and downs with this team. He's going to want to lead them on Sundays, but they've got to do what's best for the organization overall. So I think this could come down to Sunday and how he looks all week and how he performs on Sunday and feels on Sunday in pregame.
Yeah, I don't think coaches are wired in that league. Oh, we, you know, so many people out there are saying, well, you know, we could sit up.
Looks like they lost Jordy Holtberg there from him. Jeff, you still there?
Yeah, I lost him though. I couldn't hear him.
Yeah, I think he cut out for a moment. But Jeff, you know, we can just talk about looking at the Saints team and how things have been over the last several weeks. What's been the biggest takeaway for you? Just the resiliency this team has had.
Yeah, look, I think their ability to continue to play at a high level, to rally the troops, if you will, without Drew Brees has been remarkable. I think losing Brees was kind of the rally point for the entire organization, I think. You know, the coaching staff, I don't think, has ever coached better. They had to rise to the occasion. And clearly the rest of the team, the defense, has played lights out. I think they're playing as well as any defense in the league. Special teams has contributed. They've kind of gotten contributions from all facets of the team, and they're just a very complete team right now. And I think that Brees injury kind of galvanized the entire locker room and forced everyone to kind of raise their level of performance and execution because they knew they didn't have the future Hall of Famer to lean on so much anymore.
Jeff, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I got your phone.
Okay, sorry about that. There's these little gremlins running around on this computer. So, but this Saints defense, and I've said this before, no one expected the Saints to be 5-0 without Drew Brees. No one in their wildest dreams. I would bet the ranch against that. But do you buy into the fact that the defense said, our Hall of Fame quarterback's not here? We got to buckle down. We got to figure this thing out. And this could end up being a silver lining to a pretty dark cloud at one point in time 5 or 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, I really believe that. I think it's something of a blessing in disguise. And I know the coaching staff challenged the entire defense. They said, look, this is your time. You got to rise up right here. We need you all. And they rose to the occasion. I have to give them a lot of credit for recognizing that they weren't going to be able to just outscore folks. They needed to lock down on defense and start playing to their capabilities. And, you know, the first game we all saw against Houston, they didn't look very good. This has been a recurring theme for the Saints, though, and I think it's a positive trend that they start slow, but the coaching staff slowly makes the tweaks needed to get this entire defense and teams, for that matter, on track. And I really felt like Dennis Allen he called a great game on Sunday. His staff, I think, Jordy, one of the underrated aspects of the Saints team is their coaching staff. I think it's perhaps the best staff they've had, and a lot of guys on this staff are going to end up being head coaches in the league. And it's been intact now this is the third season, and that's very rare to have everyone back for three straight seasons, and it's showing on game days with the game plans.
I would venture to say that the win over Chicago has been more impressive than any because of who you're playing and where you're playing them. But the fact that you didn't have your quarterback, your Hall of Fame quarterback, but more importantly, you didn't have your top running back and you didn't have your tight end, and you still figured out a way to win the game. That's remarkable to me.
Yeah, I mean, this is really, I think, becoming a testament this season, this run, to the greatness of Sean Payton. Let's face it, we all knew he was a great coach, but there was always that Brees factor. You wondered just how great he could be without one of the greatest players in the history of the game, calling the signals out there on the field. And now we're seeing just how good Sean Payton is. Yeah. You know, I had a coach earlier this year tell me about Sean. They said, you know, there's nothing like Sean in the middle of a crisis. He rises to the occasion. He lives for those kind of moments to kind of, crisis management, if you will. He learned under Bill Parcells, and he's had it now. And he's risen to the occasion. I think he's been challenged by putting together a weekly game plan, stimulated mentally to do that. And they are just coming up with creative ways to move the chains. It hasn't always looked great, but they've gotten into games, Jordy, and they've managed the game. They played Dallas in a slugfest, took four field goals. They did it. You know, they got into a higher scoring game against Houston. They did it. You know, they won that game. I mean, they figure out a way to win and what it takes in that individual game to be successful.
And that's what I like. We're talking with Jeff Duncan on The Athletic. I forgot that back in the day, the current head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, Cliff Kingsbury, was a Saints quarterback.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he was the backup here. I covered Cliff Kingsbury, and I remember distinctly him. He was really good friends with probably a few Saints fans even know this player. Glenn Pakulak was kind of a journeyman punter that came to the Saints and ended up being good friends with Cliff Kingsbury. And I remember Glenn Pakulak telling me about going on a vacation with Tom Brady and Cliff Kingsbury to Brazil, and they hung out with Giselle.
Wow.
And I'll never forget. I had this vision of Cliff Kingsbury as one of the heartthrob coaches, and Giselle, and Tom Brady, and here's Glenn Pakulak, a journeyman punter, hanging out with this group.
Hey, nobody looking at Glenn Pakulak, I can tell you that. real quick before we let you get out of here, Drew Holiday's got to perform like an MVP candidate. Everybody says he's an MVP candidate. He can't come out the gate with 13 points. He's got to live up to the billing. He's got to get better than that.
Yeah, I felt like he was pressing a little bit in that game. I think the rookie, Nikhil Alexander Walker, he had all kinds of family there in Canada. He was pressing. But I was really encouraged by the Pelicans' start.
Yeah.
Jordy, I mean, they went on the road. Playing in a very difficult situation, an emotional night for the Raptors.
Yep.
And they took them to overtime. They arguably could have won that game, and they did it without Zion Williamson.
Yes.
And, that's a difficult task. I think they showed they've got good depth. And look, don't overreact to the early rotations. Alvin Gentry's trying to figure it out. I mean, they've
Absolutely.
Got 12 guys.
Yes.
Part of the problem is they don't have any just other than maybe Drew Holiday, just Brandon Ingram, any guys that just stand out well above the other ones. So they've got to figure this out. They're going to take about a month, I think, to calibrate a formula that works for them. So it's going to take a little time, and unfortunately, it's a merciless early schedule, and so they might take their lumps early, but they're going to be fun to watch. That's pretty clear.
We got to get a T-shirt made with BZB. We got Breeze, Zion, and Burrow. Your thoughts on LSU-Auburn real quick.
Well, look, I think this is another chance for LSU to make a statement win, top 10 opponent. And Joe Burrow, who I think is the front runner right now for the Heisman Trophy, he has another big game against a top defense like Auburn, the way he did against Florida. I think it's going to be his award to lose. And what a story that would be, Jordy.
Wow.
Joe Burrow wins the Heisman. I mean, we haven't seen anything like this in Baton Rouge for LSU at the quarterback position since Tommy Hodson. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But this is legit. I don't think Tommy was, because that offense wasn't geared to a quarterback like this one is. But, Jeff, we got to run, buddy. Thank you so much for your time. And keep up the great work at The Athletic, man. Always great.
Thanks for having me on, Jordy. Take care, buddy.
All right, buddy. You're the best. The Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge is up. If you want to test your football knowledge with Acadiana's Sports Station, get your picks in for Week 8 at 1037thegame.com. Try to beat the best with the Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge. Game picks next with the Schwab.
As a local business owner, you're busy. You don't have time to keep up with overly complicated accounting practices and tax regulations. You need Go Tax Resolution in Lafayette. Call us today at 337-420-1040. From the minute you walk into Go Tax Resolution, you feel like their only client. That's because their success is measured by your success. They'll provide you with the peace of mind you deserve. Get real help from real people. Call Go Tax Resolution in Lafayette today. Your go-to tax relief.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Well, it's that time of the week, this Thursday, at this time slot, we always welcome in our NFL expert analyst. That is Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. Frank, I'm looking at the schedule this week. Is there one game that stands out in your mind of this week, just out of curiosity?
Oh, that's a really good question. Not really. I think Packers-Chiefs is interesting. It's not the marquee matchup we planned on with Mahomes and Rodgers, but I'm still really interested to see how the Chiefs play without Mahomes, how they adjust. Okay. I'm really interested to see if Aaron Rodgers can keep this thing going. But it's a good point. There's not – yeah, I don't know if there's necessarily one, like, wow, I got to sit down and watch this one type of game this week. It's kind of a little bit of a strange schedule that way.
Yeah, I'm with you. What is all this – why is everybody making a big to-do about Tom Brady? All right, he's selling his house, his trainer's selling his house, the end of his contract. I mean, talk to me about that.
Yeah, I don't get it. Look, maybe I'm just being just dumb about this, but I just can't imagine Tom Brady playing anywhere else.
Me too.
You know, people do, you know, you sell houses, whatever. I don't know that necessarily I'm willing to put all of these pieces together in this puzzle and say, aha, Tom Brady's leaving the Patriots. Maybe he will. Maybe there's some inside info out there. You know, Adam Schefter's kind of talked about this a few times. Maybe he knows something and is not just putting dots together. But I don't know. Let's go down this road. I just can't, like, why would Brady want to start over? I guess in some way there would be some competitive side of him that wants to prove that he can win with another team. But he'd be 43 years old, starting with the Titans, the Bears. I don't even know. I just don't get why. Yes, there's ego, and he doesn't think he's going to fail. But the chances of him failing, starting over with a new team, be pretty high, just because he's 43 years old. I mean, I'm not saying Tom Brady is not a good player, but at some point, he's going to hit the wall, and I think that process might be sped up a bit if you're trying to learn a new system with new teammates. Josh McDaniels is incredibly good at devising an offense for Tom Brady, and you don't know that that's necessarily going to be the case somewhere else. And then the Patriots side of it, they're not going to necessarily voluntarily move on. They don't have anybody right now. Jarrett Stidham hasn't proven he can be a starting quarterback in NFL. So it just doesn't make sense to me from any side. It happens. I mean, heck, Michael Jordan played with the Wizards. We don't know what's going to happen, but I'm not willing to. I'm not on a ledge worried about this one. I just think that a big deal's been made in nothing right now.
I don't know Tom Brady from a hole in the wall, but the only thing I could see that would do something is if he came up with a package deal and said, Josh McDaniels, myself, we're going to bring Gronk out of retirement. We're going to play for the New York Giants or something. Because maybe he says, everybody's giving Belichick all this credit. Nobody's giving me any credit. I want to prove to the world that I can win without Bill Belichick. That's the only thing that would – and I'm just speculating. I have no idea. But that's why would he leave New England unless he wins another championship this year? And then why not retire?
Right. And, I mean, maybe there's something to be said, too, about, like – What other challenge do we have right now? This would be, let's say they do win a championship this year. That would be, what, a seventh ring, sixth ring, whatever it would be. It just, at some point, I guess, you look and you say, well, there's nothing left to accomplish here. We've already lapped the field. If I can go to, again, the Titans, I mean, that's kind of the one that's come up because of Mike Vrabel. If he could win big there, then everybody kind of says, wow, you're right. Like, it wasn't just Bill Belichick. It was, but I don't think people, if people think that, they're wrong. I don't know if necessarily Tom Brady wants to spend the final years of his career correcting an incorrect narrative. But it's not all Bill Belichick.
Right.
And Bill Belichick's success isn't all Tom Brady. It's both of these guys.
Exactly.
That can't be true. Like, it doesn't need to be one or another thing. So, but, you know, who knows? We've seen crazy things happen. It would certainly be a fascinating story if it did happen. I'm just, you know, I'll believe it when I see it.
Sean Payton's got to be one of the top candidates for Coach of the Year if it ended today, wouldn't he? What he's done with
that club?
You got
to be. There's a few candidates, though, I think Frank Reich is really up there, too, because, hey, he lost his quarterback to a surprise retirement right before the season.
Yes, he did.
Andrew Luck ain't coming back. Drew Brees is coming back at some point. But I think Sean Payton has done a masterful job. I think that this, I mean, for a guy who's won a Super Bowl, I think this might be his best job. I mean, you know, we just talked about Brady and Belichick and that whole dynamic of, hey, who's really driving the bus here? And it's never just one or the other. It doesn't. But, I mean, there's always been that question. You know, I mean, is Sean Payton a great coach or this or that? I think Sean Payton is proving every little bit of I'm a great coach. I mean, he is.
No question.
He has reinvented this team. I've come on the last couple of weeks with you and said, oh, this is the week they're going to lose. There's going to be a letdown. They're playing this tough Bears defense.
Yeah.
They're playing this. Yeah. And they could keep winning. And last week was just absolutely dominant. I moved the Saints up to number two in my power rankings, just saying this is the best team in the NFC. And I don't even think there's a question about it right now. They are 5-0 without one of the top five quarterbacks of all time, and he's coming back pretty soon. So, you know, fantastic job by Payton. Look, if you want to say Frank Reich is a coach of the year, I'm totally fine with that. There's a great, great argument for that. Even Kyle Shanahan, I think, is going to have a good argument. There's going to be a few guys, but Sean Payton's got to be up there. I hope that, you know, by the time people vote on this, they don't forget that, Sean Payton reinvented New Orleans Saints without his Hall of Fame quarterback, and they won, you know, five straight games at least.
Yeah, he is Frank Schwab, shutdown corner for Yahoo Sports. All right, let's go through some of these mediocre games. I feel for the Redskins. It's a Kirk Cousins revenge game. He is hosting the Redskins. He has been as hot as he can be over the past 3 weeks. They're favored by 16. I don't think this is even close.
Why do I have a weird feeling about this game? Why? Look, I'll tell you this. I'm in these survivor pools, as most people are across America, and it just seems like the Vikings are an easy pick, right? They're going to beat the Redskins. Yeah. Why am I scared about this game? I don't know. Something in my mind is just telling
Thursday
me that this
night?
Is going to be. We haven't seen a massive upset this year. We keep seeing these 16, 17, 18 point spreads and all the teams just cruise the wins, and that's great. So someone's going to get it. Someone's going to just lay an egg because they're too overconfident. I don't know. Look, I can't sit here and tell you I think the Redskins are going to win this game. That'd be crazy. But I just have a bad feeling about this game. I have a weird feeling like we're going to get some kind of crazy Thursday night type of game, and Kirk might throw three interceptions against his former team. I don't know why. I just have a feeling this is going to be, I have a feeling that this isn't going to be the blowout everybody thinks it's going to be.
Frank is in survivor mode. All right, are you feeling bad or strange about Philadelphia at Buffalo? Bills are only a 1.5 favorite in this thing. They're 5-1. Eagles have lost 2 straight. They're playing their third consecutive road game. Why are the Bills only favored by 1.5?
Yeah, I just don't think people are buying into the Bills yet. A little bit of a mistake because they are good. Like, that defense especially is really, really good. I don't know. Maybe everybody's kind of like me where I just keep expecting the Eagles to play better. I was on here last week talking about this. I look at that roster. I look at that depth chart. I say, this is a good football team. This is a really good football team. Why aren't they playing better? Why, when they go out on Sundays, last week they were terrible on Sunday night.
Yes, they were. Yep.
They just got run off the field by the Cowboys. I didn't expect that at all. I was shocked by that. So I think it's just this stubbornness. I have it. Maybe others do too. Maybe Vegas knows that most of the people coming to the window are still holding on to this hope that the Eagles are good. I can't let them go. I think the Eagles win. I don't know why. I have nothing tangible to back that up. I can't give up on this Eagles team yet. I still think there's something there. And I'm probably going to, just keep losing pick after pick, just believing in the Eagles.
Frank, have you given up on the Chicago Bears? That's the worst offense I think I've ever seen. They're awful. The Chargers lost a heartbreaker last week. Now they're on the road for the second straight week. But give me Phillip Rivers over Mitchell Trubisky every day of the week and twice on Sunday.
Yeah, you might be right. I don't know what the Chargers' mindset is right now. I mean, after losing that game, even regardless of all the bad losses the Chargers have had over the years, that was ridiculous. I mean, for them to lose that game in that fashion is just heartbreaking. Now they're 2-5. I think the negativity in Chicago is starting to get the people. Like, Matt Nagy, for 2 straight press conferences, Sunday and Monday, was complaining about the media and, God, you guys are so negative all the time. What are you supposed to be after that game? Positive? Like, you're right. Like, that was awful football. They were stuck at 4 first downs with about 13, 12 minutes left in the fourth quarter. The Saints just just blew them out. Like, that was shocking to me. Like, obviously, I picked the Bears last week. And to see them not just lose, because, of course, you can lose to the Saints. Saints are a quality team. But to just get embarrassed. Like, they were run off the field. Yeah, I don't know. I think Trubisky has no confidence whatsoever. They're going to start booing him the first time he makes a mistake. That's going to get in his head. I'm kind of with you here. I think the Chargers still have a lot of talent. I think that they can compete here and maybe pull off a win. Something's wrong with the Bears. It's just nothing feels right about them right now, and it starts with just this terrible, terrible offense. You can't run the ball. The quarterback has no confidence. Their head coach is worried about the media. Nothing good about the Bears right now.
Speaking of a quarterback with no confidence and a coach who's just wacko himself, can Sam Darnold, is he going to see more ghosts? And can the Jets win in Jacksonville? I'm grasping at straws here. This is the worst week of NFL football I've seen.
Right, and you know, the Darnold thing is weird because how on earth do you reconcile what we saw against the Cowboys when he's coming back, first game back from mono, and he was great. He looked awesome. I was like, wow, Sam Darnold's finally kind of arrived here. And then to look so bad against the Patriots, and I know the Patriots are a great defense. I don't care who they've played. All this talk about, their soft schedule doesn't. No. You don't do this. This is still NFL football teams. They're not. You know, you're not playing in the Conference USA. Like, this is NFL football. This is professional football. To just totally destroy team after team after team after team. This defense, it could legitimately on a path that maybe be one of the best ever. So, is it just that? Is it just that Sam Darnold is the guy who we saw against the Cowboys, but the Patriots are just that good? I don't know. I have no idea what to make of Sam Darnold because he could look good against a good, talented Cowboys team. And then look, just lost as any quarterback could possibly look. You almost have to take the Jaguars at this point. I don't really trust Adam Gase. I don't think he's a good coach. I don't know if this is going to get in Sam Darnold's head. But I just don't know what to make. And the funny thing is, if let's say Darnold comes out and throws for 300 yards this week and they win, we're just going to – I think at least I will take a step back and say, wow, the Patriots are really, really good.
Yes. Arizona at New Orleans. The Cards have won three straight against three even less than mediocre teams. The Saints, of course, 5-0 with Teddy Bridgewater. They're playing in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Drew Brees is practicing, says he'll let Sean Payton know if he can play. And if he says he can play, he says that Sean will believe him and he'll play. So we'll see about what happens, and I guess you never take anything for granted. If Drew Brees says he can play, you play the guy, and it's right before a bye week, so you want to go to your bye week with a good taste in your mouth, right? You want to go to relax. So Cardinals, Saints make it six straight?
Yeah, and I'd be shocked if Drew Brees played because of the bye week, because if you just sit him out one more week, you have an extra week after that. You're giving him, instead of a 5-week window to get well, you're giving him a 7-week window to get well. I don't know why you play. You should beat the Cardinals with or without him. I mean, this is a Cardinals team. Yeah, they're better. They played a lot better the past few weeks. But still not an impressive team. Teddy Bridgewater could beat them. If you're already 5-0, so you're playing with some house money. If I'm Sean Payton, there's no way in heck Drew Brees is playing this week, and there's no way in heck Alvin Kamara is playing this week, and probably Jared Cook as well. I'm just saying, look, even if you lose, even in the worst-case scenario, if you lose at home, that's fine. We're giving each of these guys basically a doubling up on the rest time because you get that extra week after. You bring these guys back after the bye healthy. You gamble a little bit that you can beat the Cardinals at home without these guys. And even if you don't, you went 5-1 without Drew Brees, and that's amazing. So I'd be shocked if – I guess if he's fully 100% healthy and there's nothing bad that's going to happen and you trust the doctors and that, I give him the extra rest. They're going to cruise either way. I think even if Teddy plays, this is a type of game that they win by 14 points. The Cardinals aren't very good. They're just Saints all the way, no matter who's playing quarterback, and that's why – If I was the Saints, there's no way in heck Drew Brees would play this week.
I'm with you. Maybe the two best games, Carolina at San Francisco. I don't know why I got a feeling about the Panthers. And then we got Denver at Indianapolis. Let's start with the Panthers at the 49ers. Is 49ers have to wake up one of these days. I mean, they're like Rip Van Winkle. They keep falling asleep and keep winning.
Yeah, I mean, last week wasn't pretty, but this is a team that's, it's a very interesting game. The Panthers, they've won four in a row. We didn't have, be having such a different conversation about them had they not lost that game to the Buccaneers, because then you only have one loss. You're right there with the Saints in the division, and, you know, you've done this mostly with your backup quarterback. I think the 49ers win this game, but I'm going with you. I'm interested. Let's put it that way. I think the Panthers could win this game. They have a bye. Christian McCaffrey's rested and ready to go, probably going to get 30 touches again, and he's the best player in the NFL this year. I'm really interested to see this. This 49ers defense has been very, very good. But you know what? The passing game is not. I think at some point, look, you can't just go into games and throw for, 150 yards and expect to win. This is a modern NFL. I know they can run the ball, but you're going to have to get something out of Jimmy Garoppolo, and this is a pretty good Panthers defense. So I'll pick the Niners, but it wouldn't shock me at all if the Panthers won this game. I do think they are a very quality football team.
Is Cam Newton's time done in Carolina?
I don't know. I still think, Kyle Allen's been 4-0 with him, right? But he played really well in the first game against Arizona. He's been okay since then. But he's been fine. He has done his job. He'll get a pat on the back. I have nothing against Kyle Allen and what he's done, but you don't look at what he's done the last four games as a whole and say, yeah, there's no way they can put Cam Newton back in the lineup. No, this guy is, if you have serious hopes of winning a championship, and I don't know if the Panthers are really that kind of team, but, I'm sure they feel like it. Your only chance of winning a championship is Cam Newton playing near his Cam Newton level. It's not with Kyle Allen. It's just not. He's done his job. They're good. But clearly their highest ceiling is with Cam Newton playing well. And I think you have to take that gamble and put him back in the lineup and see what he's got. And maybe after the year you reassess and you look at the salary cap and all that, but not now. It is. I think as soon as Cam Newton's healthy, he's your starter again.
All right, finally, Denver at Indianapolis. Colts coming off a big division win over the Texans. Brissett was really good in that game. Denver's offense, defense has to carry them. What happens in Indy?
Yeah, man, the Emmanuel Sanders trade is kind of waving the right white flag a little bit. I was at that game last Thursday, and it was miserable. It was just awful watching the Broncos play football. That was as bad as I've seen them play. I've lived out here 16 years. It was just bad. It's just bad football all the way around. But this is a tough spot for the Colts. How do you get up for this game? You're right. It was a huge game last week against the Texans. I think that Frank Reich is a good enough coach. I trust him. I trust him to win this game and have his team ready and know that they can't just have another letdown like they did against the Raiders a few weeks ago at home. I think they're going to be ready. And I think Brissett is one of the best stories in football right now. I mean, here's a guy who, look, Andrew Luck retires. Everybody thinks the Colts are just going to fold up shop. This guy's played really good football. I mean, he's playing at a Pro Bowl level. He's been fantastic. And you feel good for him. I mean, he seems like a very likable guy. He's a good football player. This Colts team it was more than just Andrew Luck. It was a sum of the entire roster and the good coaching staff. I've been so impressed with the Colts. And, I think they're going to get it done. But it wouldn't surprise me either if they let down a little bit. It's a tough game to get up for after the Texans game.
New England's going to beat Cleveland. Pittsburgh's going to beat Miami. Yep. Give me a quick winner. Green Bay at Kansas City. It's Matt Moore versus Aaron Rodgers.
You know what? I'm going to take the Chiefs. I kind of got this feeling that, Mahomes is great. We all know that. I just think that they got a lot of pieces. They got a lot of pieces. Okay. And Tyreek Hill is still going to be good. And Travis Kelce is still going to be good. And they can run the ball. I think that they're going to be better than people think.
Frank Schwab, editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. You're the best. Thank you, buddy. We'll talk next week.
Yep, appreciate it.
All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back and wrap things up. Well, Thursday edition, the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. ShopRite Tobacco Plus discount outlets. Whether you need gas for your car, tobacco products, an excellent fast food, or a good bottle of beer or wine, ShopRite has you covered. For those on the go, getting breakfast or lunch at ShopRite is terrific. Heading out on a road trip, ShopRite has you covered with everything you need for everyone in your travel party. So if you're anywhere in central and southern Louisiana, you'll find a ShopRite store near you, a one-stop shop for whatever you need. If you can't ShopRite at ShopRite, you just can't ShopRite at all. All right, welcome back. Quick closeout to this. This just in, the Houston Astros have fired assistant general manager Brandon Taubman following a report that he yelled at a group of female reporters about the acquisition of closer Roberto Osuna. Astros admitted they got it wrong, and they're trying to rectify things, and so they got rid of Taubman. Job well done on that front. Birthday wishes. If today's your birthday, happy birthday. You share it with 22-year-old Jaylen Brown of the Boston Celtics. Happy 24th birthday to Jalen Ramsey of the L.A. Rams. 33rd birthday to soccer English star Wayne Rooney. And the number one fan of the Toronto Raptors, happy 32nd birthday to Aubrey Drake Graham, also known as just plain old Drake. Special thanks to Billy Embody, Brandon Marcello, Brody Miller, Jeff Duncan, Frank Schwab, CD, you for listening to our partners that make it possible each and every day. Tomorrow, Football Friday, Weather Report, Nickel Report, Jordy and the Judge, George Faust, Larry Holder on the Saints, and the Three Amigos will give you Monday headlines on a Friday. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfer. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.